The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Well, we've heard for a long number of months during this pandemic that life in the single-resident occupancy hotels of the Downtown Eastside has gotten significantly worse during the pandemic, with many people being forced into their rooms despite having to use shared bathrooms and sometimes shared kitchens, and no common areas in which to have while they isolate or quarantine during COVID-19, while they're asked to be minimizing their guest contacts, but also told never to use drugs alone for their safety. We talked to Wendy Peterson. She's with the Downtown Eastside SRO Collaborative. Really glad to have you with us on Co-op Radio's The Pulse, Wendy.
Yeah, it's remarkable to have Downtown Eastside focused reporting dollars from the best reporters in the city, you and Jen.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really kind to say that.
Yeah, you really are. Yeah.
And you know, the neighborhood honestly deserves its own widely distributed publications.
And I'm sure everybody can see that. Like, I'm sure you can see it even more.
You could report on this like an entire city, right? Like, it's not just 16,000 people. It's every issue that affects low-income and Indigenous British Columbians, for instance, is in the neighborhood.
Every good and bad thing in the world is concentrated here.
So first of all, could you tell our listeners, Wendy, about the SRO Collaborative? What do you do and kind of how long has this been going on for? Because I think I've been following your work there for maybe 8-9 years.
Yes, and we're a little under the radar, and that's for a good reason. For a long time, the landlords hated us and did not want us to be in their buildings organizing with tenants. So we started quietly in 2015, under the umbrella of another organization. And, we worked on with tenants at the Regent and the Balmoral hotels, and that led to the closure of those buildings, unfortunately. But we wanted to help the tenants improve the maintenance conditions, and tenants pushed. We just helped the tenants basically exercise the rights under all the various bylaws and the Residential Tenancy Act. And the more we held the owners and the city to the law, the worse things got, if you can believe it.
Hmm.
For tenants. So it's a bit of a, we discovered the paradox and the systemic stuckness that single room occupancy tenants live in, where they want to have improvements, they want repairs, but they can't ask for stuff because if they ask for help or if they try to assert their rights, buildings, they get either evicted, they get backlashed, their rents go up and they get gentrified out, or their buildings shut down.
Right. There's no middle ground to improve the conditions.
There's no middle ground. And they're just sitting ducks, like prisoners.
So I'm wondering, you mentioned there's over 100 buildings in Vancouver that are single resident occupancy. How many people live in SROs at this point, do you think?
There are about 8,000 people living in single room occupancies, but only about 3,700 to 4,000 people are in privately owned. The rest are government owned or nonprofit owned. So I'm focused on the privately owned hotels with the SRO Collaborative, and that's about 3,700 units in 105 properties.
I think a lot of our listeners live in SROs or have lived in SROs at some point, since our audience is the Downtown Eastside, and it's a pretty big form of housing there. What has happened in the SROs during COVID-19 and over the last 9 months?
Well, people who live in the SROs, those of them listening know this already, but those who don't may not realize that people share bathrooms in these hotels and share a lot of common area, whether it's in the hallways, if there's a community kitchen potentially. But for the most part, what's happened in the hotels, tenants, actually, there hasn't been a lot of outbreaks of COVID. There's one that I know of that happened at the West Hotel Pub. There has been cases of COVID in the hotels, but it's been pretty sporadic and seems to be contained and not spreading like the wildfire we thought would happen. I just heard a figure from Bonnie Henry's office recently that only that there's been 300 cases of COVID in the Downtown East Side to date. So I know that some of those were in social housing because I live in the Four Sisters Co-op, and there was a couple of cases here, and there's been some at the Lori Krill Co-op. So it's not happening all in the hotel.
Yeah, and some are in the like Union Gospel Mission and Salvation Army, both had a few cases.
There's been some at the homeless population and people at the OPS sites and a lot of staff, I think, I'm hearing, workers, I mean. So what happened?
I mean, if you mentioned 300, I mean, 300 sounds like a small number, but when you think about a town, you know, like the Downtown East Side is about 18,000 residents or so. If there was a town of 18,000, like, say, Nelson, BC, that had 300 cases, I think that would be cause for alarm.
Yeah, that's right. I just feared way worse because of the communalness of the living environments and the living conditions. I thought it would be way worse. And now let's just hope that it doesn't get way worse and the numbers don't get out of control.
What's going on with the no guest policies that many had expressed concern about?
Yeah, so, and I was part of helping to get the word out about that. There still are some no-guest policies, and I believe that it's BC Housing has been upholding a no-guest policy, supporting their housing nonprofits to have no guests. And I think that's where a lot of the problem is happening, although in the privately owned SROs, the landlords have put up some landlords have put up signs saying no guests allowed. I don't know how closely that's being policed or regulated by the privately owned landlords, but it is happening.
Now, what's the issue with it? Because obviously it's for COVID transmission reasons, but what are the concerns?
Well, the main issue is just the social isolation that tenants are experiencing because of COVID means that in the worst case that they're dying of overdoses because people are used to having witnesses if they're using and their friends are there to support. And if they're not there when that's happening, people are dying alone. So there's been a lot of overdoses in the community. And we don't know the numbers. We're never given the number for the Downtown East Side, but it has gone way up in British Columbia.
The numbers for the province have been record high for 5 months running now, over 250.
Yeah, so that's one issue. The other thing is a lot of more services in the community have shut down. So people are just kind of more stuck at home in these very small 10 by 10 rooms or 10 by 12 rooms. So it's not fun to be stuck in your SRO because people's lives are not self-contained. Like they don't have their own bathroom, kitchen, living room, you know.
Some people rely on community centers or libraries for internet.
Your life is in different parts, in different places in the Downtown East Side. And so if you can't do that as much, you're kind of more stuck at home. And the problem is these hotels don't have good cleaning. They don't have good maintenance. They mostly don't have internet. They don't have all like amenities to help make folks more comfortable and stable at home. So COVID has not been good for the Downtown East Side. However, the good part, the silver lining of that dark story happened in October, and it came out of the work that we did with the city during the first months of COVID. The city declared that they're going to buy they're committed now to an acquisition strategy to purchase all 105 privately owned SROs.
How do you feel about that? I thought the demand was for 10. Wasn't the demand a long time to buy 10 buildings?
10 by 10. We actually, the demand was buy one a year because we thought, never thought. I couldn't believe it. Like it took me days to ingest what I was reading in their report, because I didn't believe it. I had written a report, I'd written a speech for City Hall that was like edgy and angry. And then when I read the recommendations, I was like, what? Okay, I guess I got to throw the speech out. Do I trust them? Do I still need to? I'm just not used to winning thing. It was very odd. And there could still be some negative things that happen out of that acquisition strategy. I talked to a tenant on Granville Street at the Vogue Hotel who lives with one of the worst landlords in the city, and worse than the Sahotas, and said, oh my God, does this mean that this nonprofit housing company is going to come over and take over our place? Because I would rather have my current landlord than that.
Why? If the landlord is so bad?
And life-threatening bad. Why? Because people don't want to lose their sense of normalness and freedom and legality of living in a regular rental rental unit.
I mean, one thing I've heard from nonprofit housing is there's often room check policies that kind of violate people's privacy, that kind of thing, guest policies.
Yeah, and just more kind of institutional control and less voice, I think, because they can't get as much help if there's things go wrong. Like if they go to the RTB or if they go to a legal advocate, like it's just not as much sympathy or support if you live.
Why not say if the public money is going to go towards this, that residents are formed into an association in each building that's bought?
That's what the Ethro Collaborative is working on, a couple of projects. And one of them is to build, we have some pilot privately owned SROs that we're just starting to get tenant committees organized in. So we can build in some governance model for tenants. And we are hoping the tenants will be, and the idea would they will be involved in coordinating some of their own services in the building, and identifying needs themselves and operating in an autonomous fashion from the management.
That's fascinating. Do you think your experience with cooperative housing kind of has informed this?
Yeah, well, I think I've lived in the Four Sisters Co-op for 30 years. And I think my kids who were born here, who are now in their 20s, I think they just have, like, their brains are different than other kids. They're like, the toys in the courtyard are everybody's toys, you know? So I think it has made a difference, although I'm not involved in the operations of the Four Sisters. I just do my bare minimum duties because it's too much. Like, I do so much community work, I can't actually get involved in the committees. But yes, that is the vision, is for tenants who are stereotyped as people who need support, can actually have more say and control and be involved in governing their own lives and their services they need and want and building stronger community together. And we're using also food, and we're starting to get tenants to help tenants do repairs so that they don't have to ask their landlord for the repair, which is cool. Because tenants can't even ask their landlords to help them without risking rent eviction.
And they might be seen as a problem tenant kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. So we're doing that, which is very cool. It's under the radar.
And you're helping build skills.
And we're building skills and community. And so we, through COVID, from March, April, May, June, 4 months, where it was really intense, where we thought, along with the city of Vancouver and probably the province, we thought there was going to be 100% transmission in the hotels because they're communal environments, living environments. So we worked together daily with the city. And the city got to see the situation through our eyes because we created a COVID emergency network in 50 of the 105 hotels, actually 52, I think. We had one tenant in each hotel. We got them a free phone contract. We got them COVID, like PPE supplies, hygiene supplies. We got food into the hotels. And we started asking, we educated them about COVID symptoms, how to get testing. They put up posters in their hotel. They let us know if somebody in their hotel had symptoms. We could talk to Vancouver Coastal. We basically set up this little relay network.
It sounds like everybody has a residents association in the city except the SRO tenants these days. Well, I mean, I'm talking about like West Point Grey residents and Strathcona residents associations and Yale Town residents association. These are some of the ones really kind of bristling against safe injection sites and hotels.
The Downtown Eastside Residents Association operated from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s, 30 years. It just doesn't exist right now. And my theory is the nonprofit societies have taken over that space, but a lot of them are management companies. They're not residents associations. So yeah, once DIRA phased out, like Portland Hotel Society, Atira, Rain City, all those big housing nonprofits now are kind of speaking on behalf of the community all the time, but they're not resident associations.
So, I mean, this is a bit of a lopsided power dynamic then in the city, with many of the residents associations seeming to represent homeowners. And you've been highlighting some of the resistance they've had to sheltering homeless people, sheltering Tent City residents, and safe injection sites, for instance.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Once in a while. I mean, that's on my side through Facebook. I'll, like, post something. Like
yeah.
Today, I posted that letter about the Point Grey. They're wanting to use the
Jericho Youth Hostel, Hostel Link International, right at the beach there, with very few residential or business locations nearby. And I'll just read a bit of this letter from the Residents Association, saying that it does not meet the location criteria. It will have a major impact on local residents at parks and will lead to needles, garbage, weapons, and increased criminal activity. So this is as the Tent City looks at potentially being displaced from Strathcona Residents Association. The housing solution seems to be opposed by another one. What do you think of that? The issues of needles, garbage, weapons, and increased criminal activity. I was just observing that, you know, the Tent City is the crisis, and we heard about this in the election, was because Strathcona residents say they don't want the increased needles, criminal activity alleged, and weapons in Strathcona. This is the solution, supposedly, and another residents association is saying no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So wherever people go, they're not going to be wanted.
What do you make of that?
Well, I'm just totally offended by it. And I think if people are concerned, they should actually go and meet people and realize that they're just normal people.
Your comment on Facebook, where's my pitchfork with that letter?
I get so mad at the righteous, self-righteous homeowners who don't want social housing or shelters in their neighborhoods. And at the same time are aghast at, you know, homelessness and people on the street.
And at the amount of money spent on the Downtown East Side for housing.
Like, it's like so offensive.
There's a Venn, if you drew a Venn diagram of people who didn't like the spending, government money spent on the Downtown East Side, the supposed million a day, and the Venn diagram of people who don't want people housed in their neighborhoods outside the Downtown East Side, I think there's a pretty big overlap.
Every the same. And that's probably why, and the lack of education and critical thinking in our society is pretty profound, that people can even have those opinions in this day and age and not actually have anybody helping them understand the hypocrisy and the stupidity of that. People here, like, just think of all the people that are helping on the street, handing out food, creating shelters, trying to pressure for housing, and it's all uphill, and things are just getting worse and worse and worse, and on the ground, and then it just feels hopeless sometimes. Absolutely hopeless.
It's good to have those reminders of the little victories that have happened, at least.
This was just we had this little victory with the SRO thing, but still, you know, the devil will be in the details, as Jean Swanson, Councillor Swanson, would say. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. What do you think needs to be done about Tent City? I mean, it came up over and over in the election, and it seems that all of the focus was on this supposed rise in crime and now this new Vancouver Police Department street disorder squad. It all seems related, interconnected issues.
Well, just back to the basics. When I started working with Councillor Swanson at the Carnegie Center in 2005, We were both working for the board of directors, Jean as a volunteer and me as their one paid staff person. The basic thing that we knew we needed then, and we knew we needed before, and we still need now, is public housing. And to take housing, not to make housing such a commodified luxury item that people can't afford it and have to compete so hard for it. It's very simple. That would be a huge investment to get people off the street. And it needs to be built in the thousands of units in the city of Vancouver per year, not just 200 a year. There were years where we were lucky to get 200 new units a year. And we don't get them at rates that people can afford. So part of what's happened over the last 20 years is BC Housing has changed the definition of social housing, and they want richer people living in social housing to pay for poorer people in social housing, but they still call the whole thing social housing. So the public is confused. They think, oh, we're building all this social housing, but they don't realize that a lot of it actually isn't affordable to the people who need it the most. They don't want taxation. They don't want to tax the rich.
We just did an interview on our show this week talking about how the welfare shelter rate hasn't increased from 375, even in the 4 years since the NDP were elected.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So if people, and I think that's a problem with these kind of issues, it requires a lot of critical thinking and access to information, and the public doesn't get it, either of those things. Help with either of those things. And I think if they had it, they would come on board and we would solve the problem. But I think the reason why it doesn't get done is I think the main thing that governments don't want to do is have progressive taxation in place so that richer people are paying way more taxes. And people that live in mansions are taxed, their property taxes should be higher, not the same as somebody who lives in a condo. Or, yeah, even a single-family house, the cheapest single-family house in Vancouver, it has the same tax rate as somebody in a mansion. Mm. So it's hard to create enough money. And then also, their zoning can devalue neighborhoods. And, well, if our entire economy is structured around profit, like market activity around housing, I think it's a weak economy, and housing needs to be more in the public sphere. And until we get there, it's just going to continue to get worse and worse here. But, you know, little ray of hope was this recent decision at City Hall, which frankly, we've been working on for 5 years, more than full time to get. Happened. And I think that's because we did election organizing to get Councillor Swanson in, and that really helped. So yeah. My main message to everybody is if they share these ideas, to join us to door knock before the next election.
How do people get involved?
Well, through COPE, the Coalition of Progressive Electors. Stay tuned, get a membership. Go to their meetings online. They're happening online during COVID. And election organizing starts to happen a year or a year and a half before, I guess, November of 2022.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. Anything else you wanted to add, Wendy?
No, that's catching you up, I think.
Great. Well, we look forward to having you on again. You're always welcome on the show.
Thanks, David.
Stay healthy.
Keep up your good work. All right, you
too.
Bye-bye.
And that was Wendy Peterson with the Downtown Eastside SRO Collaborative and a resident of the neighborhood. And just to note that after this interview was conducted, the West Point Grey Residents Association distanced itself from it, saying it was not authorized officially to be on their letterhead, even though the group does oppose turning the Jericho International Youth Hostel into a haven for people experiencing homelessness.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.